So one of my favorite parts of going to the movies comes before the movie even starts. You buy the tickets, you get your snack or your drink, you make a quick stop in the restroom if you need to, you walk into the nice and dimly lit theater, you find the right seat at the right place, and that's good, and then you sit back and you wait in anticipation for that moment when the lights go down, and then, that is my favorite part, the previews. I really love the previews. I want to make sure that I get there in time to be able to see the coming attractions. I mean, even when I rent a DVD or I pull one out of my closet, out of my cabinet to watch, one that I already own that I've watched multiple times, I'm going to sit back and wait and watch the previews. I mean, maybe that's part of having grown up when you had VHS and it was put there at the beginning and you just sort of wait. But I want to watch them. I want to see them. There's something about getting those brief snippets of scenes from full-length movies that builds anticipation, even if I've already seen the stuff. And if I haven't seen it, then it helps me realize that I want to see more of it, or maybe I just want to skip it altogether. So, I mean, when I see the ads on the kids' movies for Beverly Hills Chihuahua, that's right out. I'm not interested in seeing any of that. But you know, if I see anything about any sci-fi flick, I'll go, I could watch that. Let's see. Which gets me in trouble sometimes, because sometimes they're just really bad. And if it's a book, you know, that's been made into a movie and I know the story, I'll be on the lookout for clues as to how faithful that the movie makers stayed to the established story's sort of universe. That preview is an art form. I mean, there are some really important things to consider regarding purpose when viewing a trailer. I mean, good trailers, there are good trailers that are for bad movies and bad trailers for good movies, but good trailers, I mean, they have several purposes. First, trailers want to give a sense of the content or the story. They need to be able to let the viewer establish the genre and understand the conflict and tension within the story, as well as give a sense of the overall story arc. Good trailers want to identify the major characters of the film, the stars who are present and what their roles are. Good trailers can also preview or showcase the work of the cinematographer or the special effects that are there. Give the audience a glimpse of the visual wonder of a film, if it has any. That can go a long way for the overall purpose of the previews, which is really at the heart of it, generating buzz or excitement for that feature-length film, getting people to talk about it. We hear of stories, right? People will go to one movie when they know that the first time that the trailer for another movie, and this happens with movies like the Star Wars genre, the stuff with Harry Potter, they go to a movie where they know that first trailer ever shown is going to be done there. So they'll go to the midnight showing and pay $18 to get into the movie and see the trailer. And there are reports of some people that after the trailer, just getting up and walking out. Because that's all they really wanted to see. They're going to talk about it. They want that sense of excitement to build. Well, we also know that there are pitfalls to avoid with trailers. So we always have to watch them and keep in mind that maybe it's not exactly what is shown, but I mean, some trailers misrepresent the movie. You go in expecting one thing from what you saw in the trailer, and you're handed something else entirely differently. Some of the trailers give away too much of the ending. I mean, even if we know at our heart, because we know it's a romantic comedy, a trailer for a romantic comedy, we know that the main characters, the man and the woman, they're going to get together in the end, but you don't necessarily show shots of the wedding scene in the middle of the trip. Sometimes we go to the other extreme and make it far too cryptic. And people just can't wrap their brains around what's happening because they don't give us any sense of that. Film might not lend itself to being chopped up into brief snippets. And then sometimes the trailer editors just aren't that good. And then maybe sometimes those trailers, well, they show the best parts of the movie. And we all know that. We've gone to those movies where we expect the movie to be great. And everything that was great about it, we had already seen in the trailer. And we're done. Ugh. So thinking about the pitfalls and the purposes of movie previews, if we were putting together a trailer for the story of Jesus, what would we do? How do we form a 30 to 60 second collection of scenes from the story of Jesus that give a whole sense of the story of Jesus, his humanity, his divinity, the deep and abiding rootedness of Jesus within God's story of salvation? The special effects? Can we get that whole scope of the story within there without giving away too much? Or being far too cryptic that some buzz can be generated? So a few years back, if you remember, right, Mel Gibson had The Passion of the Christ. He clearly focused on the Passion. Really focused on the Passion. And while the crucifixion is central, there is more depth and a larger story arc to be brought into the picture. Without that much larger, overarching sense of the story of salvation, well, just focusing on the Passion seems to coincide with critics who argue that the story of Jesus and the crucifixion is just divine child abuse. But included in the larger sense of the story, it answers that charge. It makes sense. So maybe instead we lift up the clips of Jesus' teachings. But he's more than a human teacher. So do we show off the special effects portions, right? The water and the wine, the healings, the calming of the storm, the feeding of the 5,000? Well, maybe, though, then the buzz that's created gets people excited about Jesus just so he can improve their current situation. In many places, Jesus is reported instructing the crowd to say nothing about what's happened. So, for instance, after feeding the multitudes, Jesus wants people to say nothing about what's happened, so the crowds don't simply flock to him to have their bellies filled. And all of these things are important in Jesus' story. But how do we condense them all into one brief preview of everything? Perhaps our best bet is our gospel lesson today. One brief scene that wraps up so much that is important and central to our story. We do get a sense of the story without giving too much away. We are shown that Jesus' character is central and is vital to the story. And we get some killer special effects. So, in writing stories and bringing people into that, it's always good to kind of start in the middle of some action. In the middle of a story, you want to jump in. And our lesson opens up 6 days later. Clearly, this scene is in the middle of something. So previously, Peter confesses that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of the living God. Well, let's not give that away too soon, because it's going to come up. But there's also the sense that the story is part of something bigger. 6 days echoes the days of creation. And if this is 6 days later, this is the seventh day. This is the day of rest, the day associated with the Sabbath. Sure, people who see this for the first time won't know these sort of details, but here we just get a sense of coming in the middle of the story, of something bigger than the story itself. Great stories lend themselves well to multiple viewings or readings where new details are discovered again and again and again. So now, cue the special effects, Jesus is transfigured, becomes dazzling white, a preview of his own upcoming glory. This glory is but a glimpse of the coming glory on the last day. So a nod to creation, then a glimpse of the end where Jesus is glorified, gives the scope of an epic story with a cast of millions. And then, appearing in the midst of the scene, Moses and Elijah come and converse with Jesus. This part is not to say that Jesus exists in tension to, or in tension with, or in opposition to the law and the prophets. But his conversation with them is to show that his life is in perfect union with them. His life is the ultimate interpretation of the law and the prophets, as well as showing that the God of whom Jesus is the Son is the God of Israel and not some other God that competes with the God of Israel. We do see that there can be some confusion over the story as Peter speaks up about asking about building three huts. Lord, it's good for us to be here. Let's build a hut, one for you, one for Moses, one for Elijah. Peter somehow wants to lock in the moment, freeze the scene. He doesn't see the dynamism here and that this is not an end of itself. He misunderstands. But that misunderstanding is going to be part of Jesus, a part of the conflict throughout Jesus' epic story. People will constantly misunderstand Jesus' life and identity. So just as Peter voices his idea, we get more special effects with the booming voice out of heaven, out of the bright shining cloud. This is my Son, my beloved, with whom I am well pleased. Listen to him. God speaks from outside of the creation, not from within it. He speaks just like at Jesus' baptism. Once again, God announces Jesus' identity, which announces that under his lordship, under his rule, the world will find meaning and coherence. This world, fractured by sin, will be healed by God's instrument of love. This Jesus, the Son of the living God, the Messiah, was present in creation and will hold fast to that love all the way through to the end of the world to make that love known, even in the midst of great conflict over Jesus' love. And we have to pay attention to timing. Jesus' glory shines before the cloud-bearing God arrives. Unlike when Moses went up on the mountain. Moses goes up and down the mountain a lot in the Old Testament. On one of those trips up the mountain, he comes into such close contact with God's glory that his face shines as a reflection of it. He has to veil it as he comes down off the mountain. But it does indeed fade after a while. Here, Jesus' glory is made known before the cloud, not as a reflection of God's glory, but to show precisely that Jesus is God's glory. And now, in our preview, after the booming voice, the radiant clothes, the law and the prophets present, we see Peter, James, and John cowering in fear. Who wouldn't, after all, to experience even a glimpse of Jesus' glory? to hear his divine identity announced after he shone bright white. It might seem like one's grip on existence would be ever so slight at that moment. And yet then, Jesus does something so important. Jesus turns to them, comes to them, reaches out and touches them. Do not be afraid. Here, the glory of God and the reality of human existence is joined. Jesus reminds them that he is indeed flesh and blood. Jesus is not just wearing a fleshy suit to kind of impersonate a human being. He is indeed flesh and blood. The incarnation still holds sway. So much of this grand epic comes to bear on this one moment. The incarnation, the end of time, the coming of the kingdom, the cosmic nature of salvation, and of course, the crucifixion and resurrection. For on the way down the mountain, Jesus tells his disciples not to tell anyone of this vision until after he's raised from the dead. Even with this preview of God's glory, Jesus will die, but will be raised. This scene, these 9 verses, boil a massive story down into one brief clip, the preview of Jesus' own glory. It's a great candidate to be this story's trailer, this story's preview, all by itself. And it is a great glimpse into the grand nature of God's story in Christ Jesus. And it's a story that now includes us. For in Jesus' death and resurrection, we have been united with him in the waters of baptism. This Son, present with the Father in creation and on the last day, is the same Son who has made us his own and who promises to be with us through it all. All of our trials, all of our tribulations, all of our temptations, all of our sorrows, all of our joys, this story is part of ours now. And this preview is a small but important part of the story that has and continues to generate excitement and buzz throughout our lives. As we can now, after his resurrection, declare to others the great and amazing story previewed here. Thanks be to God. Amen.